Hello, everyone, and welcome back to XO, your unlicensed therapist. I'm Kate, your unlicensed therapist, clocking in. And today, we're going to be talking about something that I'm kind of confused why anyone wants my advice on this, but I did a poll on my story a little while ago about episode ideas I had and, you know, what order people wanted it in. And this one was highly requested for reasons I don't totally understand. I understand why it's highly requested in the sense that, you know, relationships and dating are a really hot button topic. I mean, there are whole TV shows about it, podcasts about it, like the whole thing. But a lot of my followers really wanted to hear my perspective on this. And if you knew my track record, you would definitely not be asking for my advice. But I guess because now I'm in a healthy relationship, people are like, you know, how did you do it? Is there like special sauce that I need to be, you know, bathing in every night under the moon? The answer is no. To be clear, before I was in my current relationship, I had bad taste. And I don't mean just bad. I mean chronically bad. I don't think I made one good dating decision up until my current boyfriend. Sorry to any of my exes if you're listening to this. Not because they're bad people. Well, some of them might have been, but not because most of them weren't bad people. They just were not the right people for me literally at all. We're going to talk about that a little later. But this is the kind of bad taste that my friends would like physically recoil when I told them stories, and the kind that would make them pull me aside and be like, hey, like, we were talking about that story at dinner. Like, are you okay? Like, when I was 15 years old, this started happening, and all the way through my early 20s. For years, I just kind of, you know, I kept dating these people who were so toxic and emotionally unavailable, or honestly, just plain embarrassing. And the worst part of it all is I knew better. Like, the fact that this behavior was continuing when I was in college getting a minor in psychology is crazy to me. And, you know, even with all this information I knew, I mean, all the information that's available to us, I kept falling into the same cycles. And if that sounds familiar, well, congrats. Welcome to the club that I'm no longer a part of, but I was a part of for a very long time. As I've said, like, I'm in the most healthy relationship I've ever been in. So hopefully in this episode, my chaos and horrible choices and the things I put up with and the stories I will tell you can be both relatable. Well, actually, I hope most of them aren't relatable and helpful. You know, whether you're needing help, you know, figuring out whether or not the relationship you're in is right for you, or if you're just trying to figure out how to date that doesn't feel soul sucking, you know, let's get into it. So today I'm going to be breaking down a couple things. So these are just the highlights, I guess, why we're drawn to the people who are so wrong for us, some of the patterns we repeat without realizing we're doing it, the moment that for me kind of snapped me out of my terrible choices and had me change what I was doing, how to avoid dating the human equivalent of someone who's like a walking red flag. Throughout the episode, I'm going to try and tell you how I think you can implement this in your own life and avoid some of these mistakes. Although I kind of know that sometimes advice falls on deaf ears, and sometimes you kind of have to touch the hot stove for you to realize it's a hot stove. So this is all basically me just trying to give you some tools so that maybe you'll be wearing a latex glove while you touch the stove, so maybe it won't burn as bad. I don't know. Anyway, let's get started and just let's roast my past decisions for the greater good. Why not? I mean, I started a podcast. I should be, you know, I did this to myself. So let's begin. In the beginning was the word. I hate that my all-girls Catholic school NIST just jumped out. I'm really sorry if I traumatize any of you. My dating history is kind of like a bad coming of age indie movie that's like low budget, and one of your sister's brothers who wants to be a SoundCloud rapper did the soundtrack. And let's start with the fact that I did go to an all-girls Catholic school. As you just heard me quote something from the Bible. I'm pretty sure that's from the Bible. I'm not really sure. And I mean, the all-girls school of it all is like a whole episode in and of itself, which if you want to hear about it, by all means. But basically, boys were kind of not alien to me, but they were, I didn't quite understand how to interact with them, because the only way we interacted with them was either through theater or joint clubs or like those awkward school dances that they put on at like in the school basement or the school gym. It's just like a weird situation. And also like you're a teenager, so whatever. Anyway, once I got into high school, I was always kind of boy crazy from the beginning. Boy crazy is a little bit of a harsh term, Kate. I was, from a young age, I showed an interest in the opposite sex, I'll just say. And it didn't really start until my teen years when it became like real. My parents were pretty like, not strict, but pretty protective of me and really wanted me to be a child and not rush into anything. And so none of my real relationships started until I was in high school. So when I was a teenager. And there were like a slew of situationships that were toxic and crazy and that like should have been red flags from the beginning. And I kind of feel like at that time you just are dating. You're kind of just dating because it's what you think you should do. And you have all these pheromones and hormones and things going on. And you're just discovering your body and your sexuality. And so are other people. And it's just kind of a crazy time to have all teenagers be together. It's crazy. I understand why we do it, but it's still crazy to think about. And so I think we were kind of just all trying to figure out what dating was, and I made some terrible choices. Some choices we'll talk about a little bit later. So that's basically my teen years. We dated, like I'm air quoting that because it was really like we texted and then we like kissed once at a dance or like, I mean, again, I went to an all girls Catholic school, so there was nothing, we didn't have access to them at all hours of the day. And like I said, my parents were pretty protective of me, so I wasn't sneaking out. I was terrified to like do anything like that. And anyway, that's the teen years. And after I left my teendom, I had a kind of on and off again situation that kind of started when I was a junior and colored early years of my college career, on top of the fact that I was also starting a situationship, we'll call it, that kind of lasted all 4 years on and off. And then I also, my junior year, dated somebody pretty, it's not serious, it was just really whirlwindy. And that relationship is my Roman Empire. That one really screwed me up pretty bad for reasons that I will reference later. And I think in college, kind of similar to teendom in high school, I was still trying to figure out who I was. And I think most people are trying to figure out what we're doing generally, let alone in dating, but in life. I mean, it's kind of crazy that us as a society at large have determined that 17-year-olds should pick a major and that's what they're going to do with their life. Like, that's a little cuckoo crazy that we're giving so much stock to a 17-year-old. I'm personally terrified of my 17-year-old self. And in college, I made some equally terrifying choices with these men. And it was bar life and kind of like having access to people at all times, which was so new to me. And I kind of had to learn how to like interact with boys or with people of the opposite sex. I was really trying to figure that out. I let a lot of shit slide. I played a lot of, but he texted me back 18 hours later, so at least it wasn't 20. Like, I did a lot of shit like that. Or I would like try to change someone, or like I did a lot of the things that everyone does. So that was college. And so post-college, like directly post-college, dating at that time, I feel, was just weird. It was the first time that there was no built-in structure like school, where you had access to people, or you knew you had access to a group of people that had something in common, that you went to the same school or you lived in the same area or you did the same activities. Like there wasn't really that infrastructure anymore, especially because I graduated and I went right into performing and theater, which doesn't have like an office space. And even my friends who did go into more corporate America, it still was hard because, you know, you don't want to, part of my friend, shit where you eat. And obviously COVID was happening and dating apps were atrocious and was like the only means of communicating with anybody that potentially wanted a relationship. And it just made situations somehow worse. There was no going out to bars. There was no meeting people. Like it was a shit show. It was a nightmare. And actually, let me tell you a quick little funny story and then maybe I'll actually give some real advice and not just yap at you about my terrible dating life or previous terrible dating life. On Hinge during COVID, there were no bars or like restaurants open. This was like, I don't know, like June of 2020. Nope, that's wrong. I'm totally lying. It was like 2021. It was like January of 2021. And I had been talking to this guy for a year on Hinge. Again, crazy circumstances. Something that would not have happened had COVID not been a thing. And we went on our first date, or we were talking about going on a first date, and we were like, should we, you know, do it in a car and just like get takeout or just like sit in a park at socially distance? Like, I don't know. I can't believe that some of us dated during, I can't believe that this was my life in 2020. And I was talking about it with my mom, and my dad overhears, and he's like, why don't you just invite him over to the house? And I was like, no, that's crazy. First of all, I've never met this man, number one. Number two, it's our first date. That's far too intimate for a first date. We've only been texting and FaceTiming. Like, this is crazy. And my dad was like, no, whatever. And so somehow he convinced me to invite this man over to our house. And man, I've never met. And we had a date on the back porch with my parents in the next room watching whatever TV show they were watching at the time. And my dad and his best friend just kind of kept walking by to look out on the porch and see what was happening. And it was actually the most uncomfortable date of my whole life. I'm not really sure why I told that story other than the fact that it was COVID and based off of a dating app. But, you know, there you go. Some more shit you can know about me. Anyway, that was like post-college, like immediately after. Once I was in my mid-early 20s, I had an era where I was swearing off emotional unavailability, because that's really all the relationships that ever really left a real harsh mark on me, other than the ones that were really crazy, which we'll get to. I found that emotional unavailability was so attractive. And those were the situations I always found myself wanting to be in, and they were the ones that hurt me the worst. And I'm sure a lot of you listening have run into this before. So I had this era where I swore off emotional unavailability, obviously only to immediately fall back into old habits. And then at the start of 2023, I made this like pact with myself to keep multiple people on my talking roster at a time. And if one disappointed me at one time, at least there would be like two or three others that could fill that gap. Again, of course, unfortunately, I got caught up in one person too quickly, yada, 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 landing me right where I was. And we'll talk about emotional unavailability later. But that whirlwind of information I just gave you led me to my now very healthy relationship. So I guess, like, how the hell did I get here? And I think what I started examining about myself is like, what patterns do I keep repeating? So when I made the choice to start dating a bunch of people, I was like, I've done the same thing for so many years and I'm expecting a different outcome, which, by the way, is the definition of insanity, is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different outcome. You can look it up. And I was like, I'm just so sick of this. And so I made that change and started, and you know, this may not be what it is for you, but for me, it was dating a bunch of guys and really seeing what I liked and what I didn't like and really taking stock of it. And it's hard, long work. I'm not saying this is like a fix-all situation. Like, you're going to listen to this podcast and suddenly you're going to have a boyfriend and you're getting married next week. Like, no. It's just examining what patterns you're repeating. And for me, it was always falling for the emotionally unavailable guy. And honestly, when I talk to a lot of my friends, that is essentially what happens. And I think another thing that is important to ask yourself about when you're looking on your dating and if you're unsatisfied in your dating life is, are you mistaking the inconsistency for excitement? I'm going to let that sit with you for a second. We're going to come back to that, you know, scarcity mindset in a sec, but keep, you know, think about that. Are you mistaking inconsistency for excitement? Because you can do that. And I did that many times. So the second part of this is the self-sabotage spiral. We all do it because we all hate ourselves somewhere deep down, which is really fucked up, but is not our fault. It's the fault of, I mean, it is kind of our fault, but because we engage with it, but society at large. Sometimes, you know, we're not the main character, as TikTok would like us to believe. Sometimes we're the villain. We're the villain in our own dating life. And I've kind of compiled a little list of things that I think are signs of sabotaging your love life. And the question I just asked you, mistaking intensity for intimacy or excitement. You know, if your relationship feels like a psychological thriller, like if you're going to go watch a psychological thriller in movies, in a movie theater, and then go on a date, if they give you the same feelings, that's like not great. That's a red flag. And you should run like the people in the movie do. A personal anecdote for me with this intimacy, excitement, intensity thing. Dated is a light word again, because it's high school, so it's not really dating. I was with this guy who was younger than me in high school, and we had a kind of whirlwind, crazy relationship that spanned really a year, but we like talked on and off a little bit after that. And it was, I was 16 years old and, you know, my hormones are at an all-time high and he's obsessed with me, or he says he is. He was relying on me and I thought that I was his everything. And it was intoxicating to feel needed and wanted and like nobody else in the world could do what I did. And I think I felt really special. And there was a lot of things in that relationship that I think I mistook for intimacy when really it was just really intense. Like he would threaten to take his own life if I didn't stay with him. There was a time where he, you know, I think he once like told me he was really seriously sick and, you know, trying to get me to stay with him. And then there was one time where he like another guy that I had gone out with when we weren't together, and he like, for lack of a better word, like challenged him in the cafeteria of the all boys school that he went to. And I was like, and I at the time was like, oh my God, this is so, oh my God, like we are so intimate. When really looking back on it now, I'm like, that is crazy. That is crazy, crazy, crazy. And I do think that a lot of media kind of exacerbates this, and that we see all of these really toxic relationships play out in a lot of TV shows and a lot of books, honestly, like the fantasy book talk world. Like you can't tell me a lot of those relationships aren't toxic AF. Like Zayden and Violet's relationship in the Iron Flame or the Fourth Wing series, like you guys, there's some aspects of it that are really toxic. It really is. And like, I don't know. I think we put it on a pedestal and really revere these really toxic relationships as what we should aspire to in the media. It happens when, you know, with who the Kardashians are dating and who the celebrities are dating, and you watch these whirlwind romances play out in real time and you think that's what I should do because it's what we're exposed to the most. We absorb it. And it kind of shows up in our lives in a subconscious way. But really, all those relationships are just really intense and not intimate, and at least from my perspective, intimate and safe, which is what a relationship should be. So that's like the first sign that you're sabotaging your love life. If it's feeling like a psychological thriller, like, yeah, girl, we need to leave. Part two would be choosing somebody that's like a project partner. If your type is men who need to be fixed, to be trained, newsflash, you're not dating, you're volunteering. And babe, there are much better causes than the little man who has a Napoleon complex or the little man who has mommy issues. Like, go volunteer at an animal shelter. Like, literally go do something good for the world. Like, don't do that, because that does no one good. That only makes you feel like shit and it makes them feel like they have some power over you. It's a terrible idea. Don't do it. And I obviously have done this. My last example that I just talked about, that guy from high school, I did this for a long time. And I really thought that I could fix him. And I thought I could fix a lot of guys. And what's so crazy is if you think about it, like, yes, 15-year-old me, I can fix this drug addict. Yeah, I can. I'm 15. It has never been done before. And I will. I'll do it. And that applies at every age, not just 15. That could be like, yes, at the age of 30, I'm going to fix this man who has lived in his mom's basement and is obsessed with his mom. And I'm going to make him love me more. Like, that's insane. You sound insane. And these habits habits die hard. Like, you can't fix someone unless they want to be fixed. And also, you can't fix someone. If somebody doesn't want to change their behavior, that's not on you. Like, they can do it themselves. And I know that really sucks if you really love someone, but sometimes just loving someone isn't enough. And if they refuse to meet you where you're at, that's, you know, that's not a love worth your time, ultimately. The last one, well, this isn't the last one, but the second to last one is settling for that bare minimum, like I talked about in the beginning. But he texted me back after 18 hours. Like, babe, that's not an achievement. That's actually not even the bare minimum. He hates you. He hates you and he wants you dead, ultimately. And we settle for the bare minimum so many times where it's like, well, he picked the place for dinner and he paid for dinner. Like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. That is the bare fucking minimum. What the hell do you mean? Why? I think we need to stop as a society And as a women or female presenting or femme identifying people's need to stop allowing the bare minimum to be like revered. Like, your boyfriend got you flowers on Valentine's Day? Yeah, that's like literally what he's supposed to do. Unless you both don't like Valentine's Day. Like, yeah. Oh my God, my boyfriend got me this really, oh my God, he surprised me and he, you know, came to my birthday party. What? Like, yeah, of course he did. Cause you're what? Or like even in the dating stage, if it's like, well, he said that he's going on a vacation. And so like, I'm sure that he'll reach out to me. And then he doesn't reach out and you're like, yeah, but he like just got back today. Girl, that's not even the bare minimum. Like if he were to God, it really is crazy to me how much we put up with. So essentially, settling for the bare minimum, another self-sabotaging situation. The last thing is the chasing the unavailability. And what's so crazy is that the minute I hear so many people, and I was like this too, where it was like, well, I just want someone to love me. Like, I don't get it. Ugh, not you. Like the minute somebody liked me, the minute someone was like, oh, but I like you, I'd be like, no. And then the minute somebody showed interest and then no interest, I'd be like, oh my God, wait, he like loves me. Like he's obsessed with me. The minute you actually like someone and you lose interest, that is self-sabotaging to such a degree that I cannot stress enough. If you don't listen to anything else in this episode, this is the one I need all you girlies to listen to and lock in for. So the big question here is, why do we chase emotional unavailability? And I think we need to talk a little bit about why we're so drawn to people who clearly do not have the capacity to give us what we want, what we deserve. And that's, you know these people. They're the ones who send you mixed signals. They keep you at an arm's length. And somehow, in our crazy, fucked up brains, that makes us even more obsessed with them. And I hate that society has drawn on this and been like, no, well, if someone doesn't give you any attention, it means he likes you. If a boy's mean to you, it means he likes you. Like, I hate that we prescribe that to children and to people because it's just not true. So anyway, let's talk about this. So number one of this is the scarcity mindset. And this is something that's been studied. There's so many studies on this. Look this up. Is essentially when someone is emotionally unavailable, their love feels like a rare commodity. It's like Birkins. Like, why is everyone so obsessed with this boxy, big, huge bag? It's not anything special. It's a bag. And they're so rare. Everyone's like obsessed. They lose their minds over it. And they're so unavailable because there's a scarcity. They're made to order. They're really exclusive. So think about it like that. When somebody is emotionally unavailable and like barely gives us any attention, when they do give you attention, it feels extra valuable. It's essentially like chasing that high that just will never fully last. And it's really dangerous and not good. And I mean, it's not dangerous. Okay, dramatic. But like, we do it all the time. We do it in our daily lives, but especially in our dating life, especially if we're having this issue of, well, I really want to commit to someone, but like this guy that I really like just doesn't like me. It's like, okay, well, is he giving you any attention? Like, is he using his love as like a high commodity, a rare commodity? Because that's not what love is. Love is overflowing and a relationship should feel safe. And like, you're not constantly feeling like you're going to go starving. You know, you shouldn't feel like the love is ever going to run out. So like this scarcity mindset thing, that's really important, I think, for people to just realize about this emotionally unavailable thing, because it's a really powerful thing. I think we really do fall victim to it. Obviously, hence my Birkin example. The other part of this is familiarity feels really safe. And I might read a few of you to filth. But if you grew up kind of in a situation, this is where the unlicensed therapy comes in. If you grew up around inconsistent love or like an emotional distance, that's what feels normal. Eek. And we chase what's familiar, even if it's bad for us or even if it's ever made us not feel good. And that's really hard. I'm not saying that in the sense of like, you should feel bad that you feel that way. Like, no, you grew up in a space in which emotional distance and inconsistent love was kind of a part of, you know, a part of the game in your family or in your life. And that's what feels normal. So you seek that out. Another thing is the thrill of the chase. And this one, I don't think there's any harm in a little chase, to be honest. But not like there's, but sometimes we draw this shit out. Okay. The chase is an important part of a relationship and getting to ultimately a relationship. But like, it's not supposed to be half of the relationship itself. And a little unpredictability feels exciting. But this is something that I work on in therapy. Stability, while it may feel boring, isn't boring. It's just our nervous systems are like addicted to chaos and cortisol because that's all we've ever known. I know that's freaking true for me. I was so used to all of these really high intensity, really crazy relationships, and that's what I was used to. So in terms, familiarity feels safe. And also the thrill of the chase kind of made, you know, I thought that that was all a relationship was for the longest time because that's all that happened up until my current relationship. It's like, it's so crazy if you really think about it. Like, think about your dating history and really think about it and be like, is my nervous system addicted to chaos? And is that why I'm so obsessed with this relationship? But then the minute they give me any type of attention, I'm like, I'm done. Really think about that because I've really had to think about that in my relationship. Let me say, my relationship is awesome. We'll go into this later. But like, there are seasons in which it feels, I kept labeling it as boring, but it's not boring. It's just like safe and stable. And I had been so used to chaos and crazy that I was like, there's something wrong. Like my body had learned that had been like didn't understand it. And so it's just crazy to think about. I think once I realized that, it changed a lot of things for me. And maybe it'll change a lot of things for you. Another part of this is proving our... Oh, this one. It's kind of like getting... Like in those movies where it's like the dork turns into like the hot girl and she finally gets the unavailable like hockey player or football player or whatever. It's just we think that if we can finally make that unavailable person choose us, it means we're special. It means we have value. And the spoiler here is it doesn't. And you inherently already have value. Just point blank period. And I know that's hard to believe. And sometimes it's hard for me to believe. But inherently, you have value. And you don't need to prove your worth by having the hottest boyfriend or having the most popular guy or having that guy who's unavailable and showing all these people like, oh, the guy that couldn't get locked down. I locked him down. Like, yeah, I know. I'm like so special. Like, you know those... I keep talking about like movies and TVs and books, but like that trope of like, he wouldn't settle down for anyone. And then he settled for her, like making us think that, oh my God, we want to be like her. We want to be that cool girl that like figures it out. When in reality, like, it's just not true. Like you don't need to prove your worth to anyone. You are special and have value, point blank, period. The last part of this is we believe that if we love them hard enough, they'll change. This is this fixer mentality, but the thing about emotional availability is it's a choice that the other person has to make themselves, and it's not something that you can force. Whatever reason that person's emotionally unavailable to you honestly doesn't really have anything to do with you and everything to do with whatever their own internal stuff is. And the more that you can distance yourself from that, the better you will feel and the more empowered you will feel in that relationship or leaving that relationship or not even getting involved in the first place. I think at this point I can smell an emotionally unavailable person from a mile away. Obviously it doesn't matter anymore because I'm in a relationship, but like, you know what I mean? Like you eventually learn like, oh, that one's a problem. I'm not getting involved. But even with my friends, like when I meet a lot of my friends' partners, I can almost immediately tell if I think they're emotionally unavailable and they're going to end up hurting my friends. And I'll tell them. I will tell them. And if you're one of my friends listening and this has been you, you know. You know that I've told you and I don't care. So all of these things about emotional unavailability and why we chase it, how do we break this cycle? And essentially just recognizing all of these things. This is like the first step. By recognizing that love and relationship shouldn't feel like a constant test of your patience and your self-worth. If someone wants to be with you, they will make it abundantly clear. And honestly, that feels so much better than any of these like endless mind games we play. And you're better off for it, trust me. Let's talk about how I kind of got to this point in my life. Obviously, all that I've said has, you know, is still stuff I'm working on, but now I've worked through a lot of it in order to actually identify that I'm in a good relationship and navigate through that relationship with healthy mindset and use actual useful tools. I think this turning point's important because obviously not everybody's situation is the same as to when they realize that they've hit rock bottom, or like that your taste in men is a public safety hazard. Your taste in people is a public, that your taste in men or people is a public safety hazard. This is going to be different for everyone, but this is just me. So if you see yourself in this, period, it could be any number of things. It could be a really heinous breakup, or like you woke up one day and you realized you were dating like the human equivalent of like, I don't know, like a hazard sign. Or for me, like it was really, I just got really exhausted from the cycle I was in. I was really sad and down. And this is gonna sound like such a dig, and it is, but I mean, there's meaning behind it. For me, the turning point was ultimately letting a man period, who rode a scooter around New York City, an electronic scooter around New York City, to make me feel some type of way. And only for him to leave me for one of my friends and genuinely think that that wasn't weird and that we wouldn't talk about it and find out. That was my wake-up call. That story I will never tell unless you talk to me in person. But like, ultimately, that obviously didn't end up well for him, and ended up great for me and my friend. Anyway, so remember how I said at the beginning of 2023, which, by the way, was right after this scooter incident happened, I was making a pact with myself about being a man-eater with dating. Like, I was just going to have a roster. And I fully committed. I was going on 2 to 3 dates a week. I was ghosting men left and right, which you shouldn't do. That wasn't good. I mean, I don't feel proud of that. Yes, I do. But no, I don't, for all intents and purposes. And I just like felt like I was reclaiming my power and a part of my life where I just felt like I had none. And obviously, like, as I said, I fell back into some old habits with only one person that I was seeing, that I just kind of let the emotional unavailability of all really excite me. But anyway, that time happened. And then I met my boyfriend literally like 6 months after I had that mindset shift of like, well, I have all these guys I'm going on a date with. I'm not going to emotionally attach myself to one. And I'm just going to meet a bunch of people and see what I like and what I don't like and just do my best. This was a big step for me, because dating freaked me the fuck out. I hated dates. I always hated going on them. I didn't go on my first date until I was in college. Well, no, that's not true. Until I was a junior in high school. I was so terrified. And even then, I only went on like one date in high school and then maybe like 3 dates in all of college. I hated the idea of going on a date. I hated the idea of like sitting alone with them, only talking. Who's gonna pay? What if I like say something weird? What if I like walk through the door? What if he tries to kiss me and I don't want to kiss him? Like I was spiraling, right? But this season that I kind of went on a bunch of dates and learned a lot about myself and about what I liked and what I didn't like taught me a couple things. And I'm going to impart that knowledge onto you now. Number one, you can have standards. It's okay. It doesn't make you a bitch. It doesn't make you shallow. It makes you a human. And it's okay to say no. It's okay to say no if you're not interested in someone. Like, that's honestly ultimately a kindness. And however they take it, that's their thing. You are not responsible for how people feel. You can't make anyone feel anything. You do what you do and they feel whatever way about it. So in that, it's okay to end things if someone isn't doing it for you. And you don't really need a reason beyond I don't feel it. You also don't owe them an explanation. Obviously, if you liked them as a person and they didn't like royally screw you over, you can, of course, if they ask, give them the reason as to why. But if it's really truly that you're just not interested and you don't find them attractive, or you don't, you know, like whatever, I don't know, whatever it is, you don't really need to give them a reason other than, you know, I'm not feeling it. I would really prefer if we just, you know, ended things. Obviously, I had more toxic ways of going about this at the beginning of this time. I had a notes app. I have this notes app actually, and I'm going to pull it up. I don't think I still have it. Okay. I just like looked for this text and I can't, this notes app text. I don't have it. But basically I had this thing where I had templates for 3 different scenarios that could possibly happen. One was labeled, if you want to end things with them, and I had a template that I would send. Next one, if you want to know what's going on, template. If they end things with you, but you still want to have the power, template. And that's what I would send if I wanted to end things. I'm not saying you have to do that, but I will say that kind of takes the anxiety out of it. And if you want these templates, I'm going to search for them in my iCloud. And if I can find them, I will post them. So that's number one. You can have standards. Another part is dating is actually like the most unserious thing in the world. And this kind of goes back to the fact that first dates and dating generally freaked me out. And in this era of which I was dating a bunch of people and going on a bunch of dates and doing a bunch of things, I got used to it. It's kind of like job interviews. Like it's like a skill that you get used to doing. If you're in the theater field, it's like auditioning. You just get used to it the more and more and more you do it. And I became more comfortable with it. Obviously dates, even in the beginning with my boyfriend, made me nervous. But the more you do it, the easier it gets. This next one is probably the most important one, I think, of all. Well, I say that, but all of them are important. But this one, I think, really would have changed the game for me when I heard this. If it's a maybe, it's a no. I cannot stress this enough to you. If you're confused, it's a big flat fucking no. And I've learned this the hard way. But I know now that real and healthy relationships don't leave you questioning whether the person likes you back or if they're going to text you back. Like, you don't have questions. You just have answers. And if you're feeling any wavering or any confusion, like, the answer is a big, big no. Like, I spent so much time agonizing over, like, well, he's still responding to me. So like, maybe he still likes me and I would used to like get my friends to try and figure it out. Like if it's a maybe, it's a no. Like if you have any questions at all, it's a no. If it's not a resounding yes, it's a no. And I know that's really annoying to hear, but it's true. And I know, again, this is like the hot stove anecdote I use. You're gonna have to touch the hot stove a certain amount of times before you realize you have blisters all over your fucking hand, like I did, when I would have been a lot better off if I just, you know, took the maybes and the I don't knows for no, and then just moved on. And I did do this at one point, actually, at the end of my dating crazy time in 2023, right before I met my boyfriend, my now boyfriend. I did that. Like, a boy that I really liked and wanted to date more seriously kind of gave me a, I don't know, I'm not really feeling it, but like, can we try again at X date because of some of his circumstances? And I remember being like, you know what? No, I'm not going to wait around for you. Like, that's ridiculous. I'm not doing that. And so I said, no, I'm not doing that. And I was really proud of myself, honestly, because I set a boundary. And then I also set a boundary within myself. So like, if he were to ever have come back, I would have been able to like, been like, you know, like, no, I said no. And that's kind of it. It was a maybe. So it's a no. And then when it's a no, it's a no. You know, another part of this is trusting your gut. Women's intuition is so freaking smart. And if something feels off, it probably is. I'm just going to leave it at that. And the last and most important part, self-worth sets the tone. And the way you allow other people to treat you is a direct reflection of how you see yourself. And in that last one, the trust your gut thing, I set a boundary. I knew my worth. I knew what I was worth. And I set that boundary and that was it. Okay, we've come to the end. And this is what you've all been waiting for. The final frontier, a healthy relationship. I made it to the final frontier. I mean, I'm not really sure how, but I am. I think this past episode is kind of an explanation of how I got to where I am. And I think these are some of the things I've learned that make an actual, real, healthy relationship versus what I thought relationships were supposed to be. So number one is it's not always fiery passion 24/7. And sometimes it's just coexisting in a comfortable silence. And that's a good thing. And it can be boring. And not in a bad way. Like, remember when I said it's not boring, it's just you're at peace. It's in a stable, drama-free way. It's peaceful. And that's what it's supposed to be, you know? And also, you know, it's not always going to, there will be peaks and valleys, as with anything. There are moments where it's really high intensity, really high passion and all of that. And then other moments where it's like, maybe not as, and a little bit more like chill vibes. And then halfway, like it ebbs and flows. Love changes over time. Relationships change over time. And like, know that that's okay. That's something that I have to remind myself all the time, that relationships change all the time because people change all the time. So the person you got into a relationship with at the beginning and the person you were, those are completely different people. They change, and hopefully with each other. But it's also okay if you grow apart. Like, I know of many people in my life who had a really beautiful, healthy, lovely relationship. And then they just grew apart. And it was never like a really crazy dramatic thing. It was just they had grown too far. And that's okay. It's okay to know that and to check in, which brings me to my next point. It's okay to check in with yourself and your partner about where you're at emotionally with the whole thing. And this is important because you want to make sure both of your needs are getting met and both of you are okay with the speed that you're going. And it's really vulnerable. I hate being vulnerable, and I'm still working on this. I literally cry every time I have to be emotionally open with my boyfriend, and he, bless him, he's perfect, just sits there and helps me through it so that I feel heard, which, by the way, is what a partner's supposed to do. Bare minimum, but still, it's amazing to me because I've, you know, had all of those horrible experiences. And that's a really important part of it too, and knowing that, like, in those check-ins, if you're not exactly lined up, like, that's okay. In that, the hard conversations you have to have in a relationship do not mean run. And I used to think that any disagreement meant my partner was about to abandon me, and it kind of spiraled into this idea that I wasn't worth working through the tough stuff with. And it turns out that that was most certainly the wrong guy. Like, I saw him the other day, and I remember being like, oh my God, I cannot believe I dated you, and I cannot believe you ruined my life for as long as you did, because I could never imagine being with you now. Like, it sickens me that I even dated you in the first place. That was mean, but he's a perfectly lovely person. But yeah, no, it was crazy to see him again and be like, wow, you were just the wrong person for me. And I really freaked out for nothing. Well, not for nothing. There were some horrible things. Anyway, that doesn't matter. Let me say that, like, working through the tough stuff is hard, and it doesn't mean to run, because if that were true, my boyfriend would have sprinted for the hills by now. And real relationships involve effort. But it doesn't mean that it's hard. Like, yes, those conversations are hard, and sometimes logistics are tricky and communication styles are different, but, like, the relationship itself should not be hard. The hard conversations are hard. And maybe that's what people mean with that anecdote about how relationships are hard work. I think that's what they mean, that sometimes there are hard conversations you have to be okay with having with each other because you have to be honest with each other about a lot of things. But honestly, it shouldn't feel like constant work or stress. And if you're breaking up every other day, you know, those on-again, off-again couples, like, that's not passion, it's dysfunction. Like, Selena Gomez and Justin Bieber, passion and dysfunction. Like, passionate dysfunction. It, not good. And I don't think anyone would say that was a healthy relationship. Basically, it's really not that hard, and it shouldn't be. It should feel like as easy as breathing, honestly. That's kind of all I have for you guys today. I yapped for a really long time. So sorry. Here are some final bite-sized reminders that I think are important takeaways. This is something I did a lot. If you have to Google, what does it mean if he blah, 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 it's already over. Don't even finish the sentence. Don't even finish typing, like, delete it. You can't fix someone. You can't do it. But, you can find someone who doesn't need to be fixed. Like, there are 6 billion people on this earth. Like, girl, like, there's someone out there for you. Trust me. And this is also a reminder for myself. Sometimes the peaceful, stable relationships feel boring in the beginning when you're first getting used to it and you're first coming out of all of that traumatic craziness that we all as a society collectively have experienced. Kind of crazy when you think about it that we all kind of can really relate to each other with this, the terribleness of some relationships. But just know that that, like, peace that feels boring is really just your nervous system adjusting to not being in constant survival mode. And the minute that my therapist said that to me, I was like, right. Okay, cool. But would I be as funny? Would I have as many funny things to say? I don't know. I don't know if you'd be listening to me right now if I didn't have all of those terrible, crazy relationships. But who's to say? That's kind of all I've got. And I had a fun time talking about this. It brought up a lot of memories. I hope I didn't spill too much tea. I always get weird about, like, sharing personal anecdotes, but I think they're important. And I hope I kept them general enough that no one will know who they are. And I doubt any of them listen, but if they do, yikes. Also, what are you doing here if you're listening to me and you're my ex? That's weird. Like, don't do that. Well, actually, I appreciate the listen. I'm gonna go. Okay, bye.